Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today. And you know what we're going to be talking about today? Why do you think we eat corn and maybe not cattails? Or how did the tomato go from a deadly fruit to something delicious and we all want to eat? Those are some of the questions our gardening expert Jeffrey Gilman will be able to answer with us, and certainly he'll be ready to take your questions and your own comments as we move along today. He is a director of the University of North Carolina Charlotte Botanical Gardens and has written on a number of books, and so I'm really looking forward to talking with him. But I also look forward to talking to my old friend Gene Purcell. Gene directs Wisconsin Public Media. Gene, good to see you.
Hey, it's great to be here, Larry.
This is our Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive, and as I talk with Gene and we talk with our guest, Jeff Gilman, want you to remember that your gift right now is so important. That's because gifts from people like you are the largest source of funding for programs. Your gift keeps this program and all the programs you enjoy going strong. So invest in your future right now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. And Gene, as always, we have goals.
You know, we do have goals, and we've got lots of them here during our spring membership drive. This hour, we've got a goal of 20 gifts, and I know we can do that. We've been having a great drive so far, and I can feel the momentum. So 20 is more than doable, and I will look forward to seeing those come in. But these goals are important because they help us stay on track. Just like in your daily life, you've got goals. We've got goals for the pledge drive, and we need to keep these ideas strong here on the Ideas Network. So we're asking you to give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars, and frankly, we do get funding from the federal government and from the state government, and it really is voluntary listener contributions that make up the largest source of funding for our programs.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and a lot of folks don't know that, but the single largest source of funding for all the work that we do here at WPR is from people just like you, people who listen to the service, who find value in it, and that means your support is vital. So you know how important it is that you make a gift, so we're asking you to do just that right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And thanks so much for being a WPR listener, and thank you to everyone who's already become a member. It's listener support, your support, that makes WPR an unparalleled resource in Wisconsin and beyond.
And it really is. You know, as you travel around the country, we've got a real gem here in Wisconsin Public Radio that you don't find everywhere. So we're asking you to support it. Make sure the news, the discussions, and Larry Mueller's show are possible with your first ever gift of $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
There are so many good reasons to give to Wisconsin Public Radio, and this drive, one of them is that your donation of any amount gets you entered in a drawing for a $500 gift card to a grocery store near you. You'll have five chances to win. We hope you'll donate to enter, but you don't have to donate to win. You can send in a postcard with your name, address, email, and phone to WPR Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Sustainers, we've got you covered. You're automatically entered. Check out the rules and details at wpr.org/drawing. Your donation of any amount right now gets you entered. Here's how to give.
Just give at wpr.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution. Larry Mueller here with Gene Purcell. Listener support, the biggest source of funding for WPR programs you rely on. And that's why your support during this spring membership drive is so important. And your gift, maybe it's $10 a month, maybe it's $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount, isn't it, Gene?
It absolutely is. And that's the beauty of giving to public radio, is you get to make that decision for yourself. What's it worth to you? And we also know that your time is valuable, and we take that into account, because when you make a gift to WPR, it takes just a few minutes. We don't need too much. We'll need your name, how to get a hold of you, how much you'd like to give, and finally, how much you'd like to pay.
And I tell you what, we have, what do we have left? We got about 50 minutes left.
Looks like 40, it, if I can do math, which is always a challenge, but I'd say 50.
Or so, and we have about 19 more people to join in to make our goal of this hour. So you make WPR programs possible when you give. So do it right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
All right. And don't forget, lots of reasons to give, the programming, of course, but as an added bonus for supporting the programs you love, your donation also enters you into a drawing for a $500 grocery gift card. In fact, you will have five chances to win throughout the course of the drive. So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And if you're a sustaining member, don't worry, you're automatically entered.
And if you're not a sustainer, you could become one right now. Easy to set up. You'll make monthly donations from the bank account or credit card you have. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to provide reliable support for the programs you love. Your gift is powerful, makes a big difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Gene, you'll come back and talk about this again.
You bet I will. Wouldn't miss it.
All right. Gene Purcell will be back at some point. In the meantime, we're going to be talking with Jeff Gilman. And I'm really looking forward to this because he can maybe answer a lot of questions for us here on Garden Talk. I started by saying, why do we eat corn but not cattails? I guess some people do eat cattails, and a few do. But what about the tomato? It was considered deadly at one point. Those are some of the questions Jeffrey Gilman might be able to answer. He's the author of five books on gardening and the environment, currently director of the University of North Carolina Botanical Gardens at Charlotte. And he was an associate professor in the Department of Horticulture Science at the University of Minnesota. And he has a podcast, kind of an interesting one. I was listening to one of his podcast features on grapes here just not too long ago. His podcast is called The Plants We Eat. So have you ever wondered why we eat a certain plant? Would you like to try a plant that isn't usually eaten in the U.S.? Maybe you have some other gardening questions. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jeffrey Gilman joins us by phone. Jeff, thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on.
Well, tell me about the UNC Charlotte Botanical Gardens to begin with.
Oh, I'd be happy to. So I've been down here for about 5 years now, run an incredible garden. We have 10 acres outdoors, split between designed gardens and nature trails. We concentrate on natives, and we also have about 5,000 square feet under glass. So we do have a wonderful orchid room, and my favorite room, we have a fruit and spice room where we have fruits and spices from the tropics that we grow. You know, the plants that I talk about on The Plants We Eat, I like to be able to taste them firsthand. So I've had black pepper right off the tree, I've had coffee right off the bush, and chocolate and cocoa. Yeah, and star fruit. So
that sounds like a tough life you lead.
It's a tough life.
Oh, so is that the best part of your job?
The best part of my job is definitely getting to walk through the gardens and just experience them every day, and knowing that if we don't have something, hey, I can say, guys, we need to get cloves out here. Why don't we have cloves?
So I'm wondering, why did you switch from teaching to get to the garden? Was it just a new challenge or what?
It was a new challenge. I really enjoyed Minnesota. It was cold up there. I know you guys know how cold it is. And just to be honest, my wife's from Charleston, South Carolina. She said, you know, Jeff, it'd be nice if we could grow some warm weather plants. And I said, well, all right. This job opened up, and I get to grow some really neat stuff. I still do teach. Teaching is one of the loves of my life, you know, besides my wife and kids. So I didn't leave teaching behind. I did, unfortunately, leave behind much of my research. And that part, I do miss the research. But it's made up for when I get to walk into that room and tell them to grow some capers.
Well, Tell us about your podcast, a little more about your podcast, The Plants We Eat. How did that get going?
Well, that was a collaboration between myself and a friend of mine, Cindy Proctor. She's another instructor. And we were just talking about all these great plants that people had no idea where they came from. I mean, you talk about capers. What is a caper? A lot of people have no idea that a caper is actually just a flower bud from a caper plant. A lot of people have no idea what it takes to develop, you started talking about corn, what it took to develop corn into what it is today. A lot of people don't realize that the crops we eat, especially here in the United States, 98% of the land in the United States is planted in non-native crops. Most of our crops here aren't native. So what we really wanted to do is just educate people, have people learn about these amazing plants that we use for food that have these amazing histories that we never hear about.
I think it really is fascinating, and capers just don't come in a small glass jar and cost $3.
That's right. I mean, they actually are the literal buds of a tree that you pick off, and there's multiple ways to serve them. One culture serves them in vinegar, another culture actually treats them with salt, and that's actually the way they're more commonly eaten, and they serve them with salt after being treated that way, being brined. So.
Well, I used some capers just last week in a recipe, and I thought I'm glad to be talking to you because I thought I got to look up a little more on capers, and then of course I didn't go ahead and do it. So I'm happy.
I've got a 20-minute podcast on capers, probably more than you want to know.
I'm going back to that podcast. I want to hear some. I really like capers, for goodness sake. So, oh man. Well, I tell you what. You have a lot of episodes. Capers, chocolate, wasabi. What's your favorite topic of all those?
Something is funny that you should ask that, because my favorite is the one that you were listening to the other day, which is grapes. And I'm not telling you that I did the best job on grapes. It was very early on. And I don't think we really had our feet underneath us. So I don't know that we were smooth in grapes, but I love talking about grapes because grapes have this amazing history that nobody learns about, because there's native grapes in the United States. There are grapes over in Europe. And, the grapes in Europe were threatened. Well, of course, you know this now because you listen to the podcast. Mm-hmm. But the grapes in Europe were threatened many times by these American diseases. We talk about all these insects, these invasive insects over here. Well, hey, we sent some to Europe, too. And the only reason that European grapes are alive today is because those European grapes are grafted onto American rootstocks.
Yes, that's right.
So I love that. I also love that... The grapes over there are alive today because the stuff they spray on the grapes to keep them alive is actually one of the first fungicides ever used, called Bordeaux mix, and that was invented because of a disease, again, that came from the United States and went over there, called downy mildew. Not powdery mildew, but downy mildew. So a lot of these incredible advances in technology came from problems that they were having over there with invasive pests from the United States.
Yeah, really interesting. Well, we've got a caller. Jeff in Menasha has something for us, or maybe a question. Jeff, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I am reading a book called How Not to Die, and it's all about a plant-based, eating primarily plants. I wanted to know what your guest thinks about that book.
I'm sorry, but I haven't read that book. Is that the book where they talk about, was it the Blue Zones, where they have people, I guess there are five or six places in the world where they have high concentrations of people who live to very old ages?
Well, they do talk about that in part of the book, yes.
Okay, that's I've read about that. I've not read the book. A plant-based diet, I absolutely believe, is the secret to growing to a ripe old age. I can't tell you that I'm a vegetarian. I'm not. But I definitely try and stick with a plant-based diet. There's certainly no doubt that it's healthier for you. People were never meant to eat meat for 14 meals a week, which is what most people do right now.
Jeff, I thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And visiting today, just to let you know again, Jeff Gilman, director of the University of North Carolina Charlotte Botanical Gardens, as we talk with him about the plants we eat. And we'll certainly look forward to your questions and comments as we move along during our Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. Gene Purcell joins me and here to help me tell you about the Ideas Network. We count on the Ideas Network, or maybe you do, for great discussions. It's your gift, any amount, that makes these discussions possible. Listener support, the largest source of funding for WPR programs, and that's why your support at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. That's why it is so important. And Gene Purcell, we've got, 35, 40 minutes left in the show. How are we doing here?
Well, we're doing pretty well. First, I have to finish this note about capers. Give me a second here. Okay, I'm back. No, we are doing tremendous. We got about 38 minutes left in the hour, and we've got 17 calls to go, so we're making some progress. But I think we've got some room to move here. So I'm going to encourage everyone to make your gift right now to Wisconsin Public Radio, because when you give, you support the programs like this one that you rely on every single day.
And thanks if you've already given. And if you haven't, really is the time. This is the time to do it right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you know, here on Larry's program, we cover a lot of topics, environmental and consumer issues. And today, honestly, is just such a great example of that. Learning about plants in our lives, things we never knew, things we should know. And it's all been here right along, but the Ideas Network is what brings it into your home and allows you to join in the conversation. And it's all possible because of the financial support from people just like you who support Wisconsin Public Radio. So support Larry's program, support all of the other programs you enjoy here on the Ideas Network with your gift at WPR.org. or at 888-202-2552.
And when you give today, think about becoming a sustainer. As a sustaining member, you give any amount, maybe it's $10 or $15 a month or $20 a month, that automatically would come out of your bank account or your credit card. Your monthly gift will continue until you ask us to make a change.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I'm a sustaining member, and it works great for me because I don't really have to think about renewing my membership. And in turn, for Wisconsin Public Radio, that means that we get to depend on you, just like you depend on us, day in and day out, year in and year out. And you're still in control. Again, you can change your giving at any time. So become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
The 2019 WPR t-shirt has a salmon-colored design on a maroon background. It shows how WPR is everywhere you are, in town, at home, in the great outdoors. How do you feel when you wear a WPR t-shirt?
This is a great feeling t-shirt.
I'm like part of this cool club of people.
I really like people say, hey, nice t-shirt.
I feel proud when I wear my WPR t-shirt.
Find out how great it feels to show off your WPR pride. Ask for your t-shirt now when you pledge $10 a month or make a one-time gift of $120. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation. Larry Mueller with Gene Purcell. Your support during this spring membership drive makes these programs, the ones you rely on, possible. And your gift, maybe it's $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
It is the right amount, and it's important because we always ask you to give the amount that is right for you. How does it fit into your budget? How often do you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio? These are all things to be thinking about. But, you know, I know some people are much more precise in the way they think about these things than I am, so let's think about it this way. So, say you hear three things a day that you're glad you heard. If you paid a dime for each one of those, that's 30 cents, that would work out to about $10 a month. So if that works, maybe a gift of $10 a month right now might be the right price at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And maybe you've already made a donation this year, or maybe you're a sustaining member. I want to thank you so much for that. Please consider making an extra gift, let's say $50 or $100 at WPR.org or at 888 888- 202-255-2. You help make this drive successful, and you'll support the programs you enjoy every day.
Yep, and we are continuing to tick along and make some progress here. Just 16 more people now is what we need to support WPR in about the next 35 minutes or so to meet our goal. And we are on our way, and with your help, we are going to get there. Your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
Gene, I'm going to have to work on my wardrobe a little bit because that's salmon color. I don't have colors that match salmon very well, I don't think. I'll have to ask Jane Arnold about it.
But this will be a good opportunity for you to expand your wardrobe a little bit. You can build everything around this T-shirt.
I will certainly give it a try. And you know, this T-shirt, by the way, it's made in the USA, printed right here in Wisconsin. And you get one when you give $10 a month or more. That's all you have to do. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
And, you know, we should stop for a moment here and thank sustaining members who are making ongoing monthly gifts. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for doing your part to support the work of Wisconsin Public Radio. But if you've been giving at that same level for a while, this could be the day that you think about increasing your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month, or again, the amount that you choose, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. My guest today, Jeffrey Gilman. Jeff, author of 5 books on gardening, currently director of the University of North Carolina Charlotte Botanical Gardens. And we're having some fun talking with him about the plants we eat and maybe a little bit about why we eat those plants, and certainly looking forward to what you have in the way of questions, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And you know what, Jeff, Maddie and DePere's been waiting a bit, so let's go to Maddie. Thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind? Maddie, are you there? Oh, maybe we lost. Apparently we lost Maddie. Well, let me give the number, 1-800. Hello. Oh, Maddie. Hello. Oh, okay.
Yes, I am here. I had heard a couple weeks ago that the Indians in the Americas in the Western Hemisphere had been growing so many crops that when the Europeans first came here and, you know, brought diseases here, it wiped out so many Indians that they weren't growing the crops anymore, and that it affected the weather even because of the trees growing up where the crops used to grow. But I also like to say that I'm a member of the Oneida Tribe here in Wisconsin, and which is part of the Iroquois Confederacy. And I know that I've read that when the Europeans first came upon the Iroquois and the Oneidas, that they had so many fields of corn and corn in storage and wide variety of corn, you know, and the pumpkins, the squash, the beans, all kinds of stuff.
That's true. And we lost some of those when the European settlers came across because they kind of picked and chose. And in fact, they tried to plant their crops over the Native Americans' crops. So, yes, we lost things. Absolutely.
Yeah. Maddie, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. That is... Do you address that in your podcast at all?
I don't address it very much, but now that we're talking about it, I think it's something that I may address in the future, especially when we start to cover different squash. There are various squash that are native to Central and South America. Various squash are native to the United States, and the Native Americans actually did a pretty good job of actually breeding different types, as Maddie said, different types of corn, different types of squash, different types of beans. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that 98% of the crops in the United States are non-native. Well, that's a lot of that. Well, some of it was stuff that the Native Americans produced themselves, such as corn, which is from Central America. Really, when the Europeans first came here, they weren't all that interested in corn. They were interested in wheat. They were interested in other types of rice, not our native rices. So they really just took the ground, planted their basically invasive crops, and minimized the Native Americans' crops. And some things disappeared, unfortunately.
Yeah. Thanks again for that call. I want to give Ed in Middleton a chance to join us. Ed, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I didn't hear you mention there's a strain of grapes that's never got white or anything, and it was on the Andes or somewhere on the other side, and this is a natural vine. It's never been grafted, and I didn't hear you say anything about that. So you can go to a liquor store and order one of these. We got our grapes from Europe originally, and then, like you're saying, they sent some of them back to them. But I didn't hear you say anything about the real grape that you can still exist.
Okay. Are you talking about fox grape? What kind of grape are you talking about? Because I don't know any, and I've worked with grapes for years. I don't know any grape that doesn't get any disease.
There is one. Well,
okay,
there might be, you might get a disease, but it's, what I was saying is it's never been grafted.
Oh, it's never been grafted. Okay, which one was that?
Oh, well, you got me there. I just, but it's on. It never got the, never had to be, and you can go to a liquor store and buy this bottle of wine. It's never had, never had been grafted.
Okay, there are European grapes that aren't grafted right now, but it's vinifera. That's the species that's European. But those ones that aren't grafted, those have to be treated extremely intensively in order to avoid the disease in insects. I do not know of a European grape that doesn't need either grafting or high-intensity treatments to control. And the insect disease that created the problem that needed the grafting was phylloxera. So phylloxera was the problem. And in order to control the phylloxera, the easiest thing to do was to graft them. And that was done by this guy named C.V. Riley, who's just the most incredible entomologist of all time. In the late 1800s, early 1900s, anyway, but he's a different story. I don't know of any European grape that it doesn't either need either high intensity or grafting.
Oh, interesting. And grapes, I was trying to remember from your podcast, what percentage of grapes here in this country wind up as wine? Probably, I think it was half, wasn't it?
Yeah, I remember it's over half, or at least around half. I can't remember the exact number, though, but it's an incredible amount. Yeah, because, you know, I guess it's all about the alcohol. Of course, now, I don't know if you guys know muscadine wine and scupperdog wine. Those are wines that are kind of southern. Now, those wines don't take any grafting at all, because those are actually United States grapes. And in fact, wine made out of the Concord grape, which you may have heard of, that's also a grape from the United States, so that doesn't take any grafting. Concord grape is kind of interesting. It's called a fox grape, and it's called a fox grape because the grape's supposed to smell like it smells when a fox pees.
Oh, my gosh. And it is that the most popular grape?
Concord?
Yeah.
No, the most popular grape is going to be the Thompson seedless, which is actually the Thompson seedless, actually an ancient grape. They just discovered by chance a grape that didn't produce seeds, and so they've kept it going all these years.
We're talking today with Jeff Gilman, director of the University of North Carolina Charlotte Botanical Gardens, and talking about the plants that we eat. And he's been working with plants his whole career, and it's fun talking with him today. Questions for him about the plants we eat, or maybe he's got a question about growing them. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Chris and Adams called in to say She's been baking with different flours because she can't eat wheat flour. She uses coconut and cassava flour, and they are
fantastic.
They're working well for her.
That's wonderful. There are a lot of different types of flours. One of the ones that I found most fascinating, and I haven't done a tremendous amount of research into the flours, but the one that I find most interesting is actually cattail flour. And cattail flour can be made either from the roots, rhizomes, which are ground up, or they can be made from the pollen. So you actually take the pollen of cattails and you make that into a type of flour, or you mix it with your standard flour so you're not using quite as much. That was the most interesting one I've read about.
Yeah, we have a fellow here in Wisconsin who writes about wild edibles, and I can remember talking with him on this show about that very flour, and they use it all the time in his in his home. Well, I don't know, Gene Purcell with us here. Gene, do you use that kind of flour or cattail?
I don't, and I'm still kind of reeling about the whole fox grape thing and wondering why anybody would even bother with it after the smell. But apparently people get through all that.
Oh, man. Jeff Gilman, our guest, and that was Gene Purcell, the golden voice of our director of Wisconsin Public Media. And he's along to talk about the spring membership drive, of course. And listeners, that means you, of course, provide the largest source of funding here at WPR. And this drive is your chance to support all the programs that you enjoy here. So I hope you'll give now at WPR.org or go to 888-202-2552 and make your phone call.
Yeah, well, the Golden Voice is back, and I'm here to update you on where we are in terms of our goal. We've got just 11 more calls to go in about the next 21 minutes or so, so we're actually in really good shape. But here's the thing about these goals. You really can't let go of them. You know, you've got to keep that momentum going, and we've got the energy. We've got the momentum. So make your donation right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
It's so much fun talking today with Jeff Gilman about the plants we eat, why we eat what we eat. We've been talking about grapes, capers got into the discussion, all kinds of things. And I think it's one of the kind of fun parts about Garden Talk. We get into a broad range of topics. And oftentimes, as we've already heard today, we get listeners calling in with some wonderful support and bring their own comments in. Sometimes listeners come and answer questions that maybe my guest or I can't answer. So we really are listener supported here. And, you know, that means when you give at WPR.org, or let's say you phone 888-202-2552. You make this hour, Garden Talk, and many more hours possible. So I hope you'll choose an amount that's right for you and then take a few minutes and make your gift.
Yeah, by all means. And I have to say, one thing I always enjoy about this show is listening to the people and listening where they're from. They're from all over the state. It's just an amazing representation of the people that live here and the things that they are interested in. And so when you think about spending your money to support something, WPR is really a worthy cause. And again, you get to decide on what that amount looks like. So for example, it's easy to spend $1 or more a day on things that are part of your routine, like a cup of coffee. I am certainly in that camp, or not me so much, but I know others, a snack from the vending machine.
Yeah, absolutely. And think about the news, the information, and maybe the inspiration from Wisconsin and around the world that you get every day when you listen to WPR. So maybe $1 a day, $30 a month, or just a little under that, or maybe a little over that is just right for you. Sign up right now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and support the programs you enjoy every day.
I like to listen to WPR because it informs me, enriches me, and also kind of challenges me. It's just wonderful. I listen the minute I wake up on the way to work, when the work day is done, in the evening, and we even have the radio on for our pets during the day. I became a sustaining member, first of all, because of the convenience. It helps me be a part of WPR in a significant way because it's ongoing. It's a way to keep the mission going, and my small part, I think, plays a part in that. I'm David from Stevens Point, Wisconsin. I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio.
Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. To make your donation in support of these programs, Larry Mueller here with Gene Purcell. Your support today of Wisconsin Public Radio keeps all the programs you enjoy going strong. And I don't care if your contribution is $10 a month. Maybe it's $100 a month. We appreciate and we count on your gift.
We sure do. And we've got this business model they don't teach in business school around here where we ask you to give an amount that you can afford or amount you think is worthwhile. And so you get to choose how much you give. But, you know, one of the things people are always asking us is, how much should that be? What should I be giving? Well, we've got some suggested amounts for you. For example, you might want to think about the same amount you pay every month for Netflix or maybe cable.
Or coffee, which, like WPR, is probably something you look forward to every day. The important thing is to give now. You pick the amount, your gift. Know your gift makes a difference. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
We're coming up on about 17 minutes before noon, so 17 minutes before the goal now, and we've got just 11 calls left, 11 more people to join in. And remember, you're the one who makes WPR possible when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And your donation enters you in a drawing for a $500 grocery gift card. In fact, you'll have five chances to win. So please do give now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. And sustainers, remember, you're automatically entered.
And by the way, if you're not a sustaining member, now is a terrific time to think about becoming one, because you will never miss a day of membership with WPR again. It's easy to set up. You'll make ongoing monthly donations from your bank account, your credit card, wherever you choose, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And these are really terrific because they provide reliable support for the programs that you love.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jeff Gilman, director of the University of North Carolina Charlotte Botanical Gardens. He's got a fun podcast. It's called The Plants We Eat, and we're zeroing in on the plants we eat a bit with him today. So I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Jeff, we have Todd in Brantwood next with a question. Todd, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call. We all chuckled a few minutes ago when you brought up the aroma of the fox grape, and yet wine was made from it. And it reminds me of often what happens at our home when my wife and I are cooking. We'll be preparing a food, often vegetables in particular, and the look of the vegetable is so odd. We'll ask each other, how did people ever decide to eat this? And I guess my question is, back hundreds of years ago, was it basically they tried every single thing that grew, and if it didn't kill them and it tasted good, then it went onto our plates?
Actually, I think that's exactly what it was. Of course, nobody can go back these hundreds and thousands of years to see exactly what happened. But if you look at what the situation probably was, there were some obvious fruits which were good, like figs. I mean, pull the fig off the tree, probably bananas. But then for a number of things, my guess at what happened is that what we had was either a drought or something terrible happened, and there were only some things available. And they tried all these different things, and the ones that didn't kill them, if they tasted good enough, they retained them for their diet.
Very interesting. So if it didn't kill you, you kept eating it.
I think that in a lot of cases that's the situation. I think that's especially true with a lot of the what we call geophytes, or a lot of the things that live under the surface of the soil. I mean, I look at a potato and I think, how did they get the idea to eat a potato out of the soil? But anyway, of course, potatoes are pretty toxic, you know.
Well, they can be toxic, can't they?
Yeah, they can be quite. They can be very toxic, actually. So, just if you look throughout history, there have been numerous cases where multiple people have been poisoned and even killed by potatoes. They're part of the nightshade family, so they naturally have a compound in them called solanine. Now, historically, people didn't worry about solanine too much, but then in 1967, they produced this potato chip, and this potato chip was amazing because the potato was extremely resistant to what's known as late blight, which is the bad potato disease. And so it was amazingly resistant to late blight. And then people started eating potato chips made from it, and everybody got sick who ate it. Well, it turns out this particular potato variety had so much solanine in it that you couldn't eat it. Of course, the solanine also gave it resistance to late blight. Now, interestingly enough, you know how Ireland, how it grew this big population by growing the potato?
Yeah.
Well, the potato they grew, normal people could not eat more than a small, or for a normal potato, people couldn't eat more than about a couple pounds of potatoes because of the amount of solanine. The Irish potatoes were called lumpers, and the lumpers had extremely low solanine, which is why so many people, you could eat so much of it, and that's why Ireland grew. Well, let me tell you something. Lumpers have extremely low solanine. Because they have that low solanine, they weren't able to resist late blight, which is part of the big part of the reason for the Irish potato famine. Solanine, it can make you sick, but it can save your potatoes.
Oh, interesting. You know, I mentioned tomatoes as well, as long as we're talking about things that, that could make you sick, or at least there's belief about, at one point there was belief about tomatoes is not a good fruit.
Sure, and that's because, well, tomatoes and potatoes are extremely closely related. In fact, I don't know if you've ever purchased one of these, but you can buy a plant called ketchup and fries. And you have a tomato grafted onto a potato, and it will actually produce both. Now,
not here in Wisconsin, I don't think.
Yeah, it'll grow. It'll grow there. Of course, you got to wait till your soil temp's 70, but it'll do it.
Oh.
Anyway, tomatoes were believed to be toxic because of they're a part of the deadly nightshade family, and because of that, they have high levels of solanine and certain other poisons, which could actually hurt somebody. Now, in 1962, somebody had the brilliant idea to graft tomatoes onto Jimson weed to make them more cold tolerant so they could be grown further up north during the off season, you know, during the colder parts of the year. The problem, of course, with grafting tomato onto Jimson weed is that the poisons from the Jimson weed would go into the tomatoes. 1962, they did this grafting. They took the tomatoes, they made them into a sauce, and you had five people hallucinating and vomiting and had to be taken to the hospital. Two almost died. So tomatoes, they can be toxic if you don't know what you're doing.
Jeff Gilman, our guest. Let's go to Joan in Milwaukee next. Hi, Joan.
Hi. Yeah, I just was enjoying your show, but I had just a comment about growing plants organically or, you know, using pesticides and all that.
Absolutely.
And well, I had I was just looking into it, and somebody did a study of yield of various different, you know, fruits and vegetables and grains when they were grown organically or when they were grown pesticides. And there are actually two foods that are grown that you get actually a greater yield if you grow it organically. And I thought this was extremely interesting because all these other plants were grown, you know, with organically, but then you had a lot of crop loss. So then you need more, you know, land. So the two that are grown that get have the greater yield are rye and peas.
Well, peas make sense because it's a legume. Rye is very interesting. And I'm not sure why you'd see that. But peas actually make sense because they're a legume, so they take their own nitrogen out of the air.
But rye doesn't do that.
But rye doesn't do that, so that's very curious. I'd be interested to see that study redone. A lot of these studies, it's very interesting to have a single study, but you really need 10 to 20 studies before you get a good feel as to which does better. Unfortunately, one of the institutes that used to do this stuff, the Rodale Institute, is not doing much of that anymore. And that's a real shame because it was getting interesting data.
Yeah, that is too bad. And you've actually, in your past, you've written a couple of books. Your name came up last week on Garden Talk. Belinda Meyer says she still goes back to the truth of about organic gardening and the truth about garden remedies.
Melinda's a good friend of mine, and the truth about organic gardening, I spent a lot of time working on that book, and this question was interesting because of the yields. And when you're dealing with a legume, it's true that your yields are often very similar, but for most other crops, organic rarely gets even close to conventional production methods.
Yeah. But it's still the best way in your mind?
Organic?
Yep.
So if we're going to... Okay. I'll tell you what I believe. I believe strongly in organic production, but I believe strongly in real organic production, not the organic production that the grocery stores foist off on us. Real organic production means you're not only using no conventional pesticides, you're using no organic pesticides. A lot of these organic pesticides that are allowed in organic production are just as toxic, or in many cases more toxic, than the conventional pesticides. So organic farming, the way it is today, drives me nuts. Organic gardening is all about building the soil. That is what an organic garden should be. It should be all about having this rich, wonderful soil to grow large, healthy plants.
Interesting ideas. And I'm really glad to have Jeff Gilman with us today, director of the University of North Carolina Charlotte Botanical Gardens. We got into yields a little bit, and he's talking about real organic gardening, and that's something that that's a topic we haven't dealt with enough, and maybe we should get into a bit more the way that he's proposing it with really no organic, even pesticides or herbicides, and what happens to yields. There are some yields that I really hope come through for us here on the Ideas Network as we go through our Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. And those yields relate to your contributions. We had a goal of 20 contributions for this hour. Gene Purcell joins me. And we're counting on you. And Gene, where are we here?
I'm going to be honest. We're doing pretty well.
Good.
We could do a little better because we've got 6 calls left. But honestly, we've got, about 5 minutes left to get those calls in. And so if we keep pushing and keep planting those seeds in our organic radio garden, we're going to be in fine shape. So you can make your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And make your gift to support the programs you enjoy and rely on every day.
We are listener-powered, and that means your donation right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 helps pay the programs you rely on. It makes a difference.
It sure does. And, when you think about the topics we've been covering just in the past hour, we started out talking about capers, and we wound up with some pretty big thinking on what constitutes organic growth in a garden. And, that is typical of what you find every single day here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and it's what your dollars help to support. We really are listener-supported, and that means when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you're the one who makes this hour and many more hours of great programming possible. So pick an amount that works for you, take a few minutes, and then make your gift.
And be one of those 6 people that we're still trying to find here in the next couple, 3 minutes as we strive to meet our goal. Think about monthly subscriptions, your cell phone or Netflix. Now we're asking you to support WPR like you pay for other services you rely on.
Yeah, but with the big difference that you get to decide how much to give here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Support the programs that are part of your day. Maybe it's Larry Mueller. Maybe it's some of the other great programming we've got here. And become a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio. Pick a monthly amount that works for you, then set up those ongoing installments at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You're busy, It can be difficult to squeeze in all the day's to-dos, but no matter how challenging your schedule is, it's always fast and convenient to make your contribution to WPR Online. Just go to WPR.org. With secure online pledging, you can pick the amount you want to give, how you'd like to pay, and even ask for a thank you gift. It's secure, quick, and pledging your support is a simple, easy task that has a huge impact. It funds all the in-depth news, thoughtful conversations, and excellent music and entertainment that are a part of your everyday, no matter how busy things get. So give now at WPR.org. Of course, you can always give us a call at 888-202-2552.
And you know what? When six more people support the WPR programs in the next couple minutes here, we will have met our goal. WPR listener supported. That's why your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important.
Yeah, it seems like we're stuck at six, but I think what's really happening is that people are on the phone making the pledge right now, and we really got just one or two more left to nudge us over the top. So hopefully you'll be one of those. Get on the phones or get online at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 and make your pledge right now.
Jeff Gilman's going to be with us. We'll take a look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net. And then he'll be back to talk more about the food that we eat. In the meantime, do it right now. Make a pledge. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Back after the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Democratic majority in the U.S. House is backing an extensive bill that would change campaign finance laws and overhaul the way Americans vote. But as NPR's Miles Parks reports, Republicans have made it clear the bill has no future once it reaches the GOP-led Senate.
Democrats want election accessibility and weeding out corruption to be key components of their majority agenda the next 2 years. The bill would have required automatic voter registration and instituted independent redistricting commissions as a way to end partisan gerrymandering. The bill also would have required presidential and vice presidential candidates to disclose their tax returns. Republicans, however, say the bill funnels taxpayer dollars into the pockets of politicians. They were also frustrated at the lack of input they had in drafting the legislation. The bill is not likely to become law, however. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell despises it, and he's made it clear he does not plan on advancing it to a vote in the Senate. Miles Parks, NPR News, The Capitol.
The U.S. economy is coming off a tough February, during which job growth just about stalled, but it increased only about 20,000. But the unemployment rate is down to 3.8%, and the annual wage increase was the highest in a decade. Women around the globe still have a much more difficult time than men in landing jobs. That's the latest assessment from the United Nations on this International Women's Day. As Linda Fasula reports, researchers find that gender parity at work has risen less than 2% since the 1990s.
A key factor blocking equality in employment is the time spent by women on unpaid caregiving and household tasks, which has barely declined in the last two decades. The amount of time men now spend on such work has increased by just 8 minutes a day. At that pace, the report says, it will take about 200 years for men and women to achieve parity in unpaid care work.
Linda Fasula reporting. The medical relief agency Doctors Without Borders says the Ebola response in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo is failing to bring the outbreak under control, partly due to a breakdown of trust. We have more on this from NPR's Afabia Quist-Arkton.
Doctors Without Borders says 7 months into the largest ever outbreak in DR Congo, the Ebola response is failing to control the epidemic. The agency suggests attempts by the authorities to oblige people to comply with Ebola control methods appear to be counterproductive. Sufferers are hiding and dying within their communities, making it difficult to track and control the spread of Ebola. There have been dozens of attacks on health workers in a climate of deepening community mistrust. Doctors Without Borders suspended Ebola operations in two towns in eastern Congo last week after attacks on two treatment centers. The agency says the causes are not clear, but political, social, and economic grievances appear to be stoking tensions. Ofebia Quist-Arkton, NPR News, Accra.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 184 points, or 0.75%. This is NPR.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio News at 12:04. I'm Hannah Haynes. Economists at the U.S. Department of Agriculture expect farm income to increase this year, but Wisconsin ag experts say it won't be enough to keep farmers out of debt. The USDA's annual forecast shows net farm income increasing 8% from 2018 levels. That comes after a nearly 18% decline in income last year. But ag economist Stephen Deller from the University of Wisconsin-Madison says continued low commodity prices basically mean farmers aren't getting a paycheck right now. National farm debt is expected to reach the highest level since 1982. Deller says producers will still carry that debt when prices improve, which could have long-term impacts on farm suppliers and other rural businesses. A Milwaukee judge has sentenced a former jail deputy to 30 days in prison for shutting off water to the cell of an inmate who died of dehydration in 2016. The order will give James Lee Ramsey Guy work release privileges so he can keep his job. He was sentenced for resisting or obstructing an officer, a misdemeanor, as part of a plea agreement. Two other county jail staffers were charged in the death of 38-year-old Terrell Thomas. Ramsey Guy's supervisor ordered him to turn off the water because Thomas had flooded his cell with a mattress. The National Weather Service has issued a winter storm warning for parts of northwestern Wisconsin. Parts of the state along the border with Minnesota are under a winter storm warning, and northern parts just east of the area are under a winter storm watch. 8 to 11 inches of snow are possible. You're listening to WPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR be the model for high-quality journalism in the 21st century, and the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
Support for WPR comes from 45th Parallel Distillery, offering Border Bourbon, New Richmond Rye, and Wisconsin Wheat Whiskey, crafted using traditional aging techniques. More is at 45thParallelDistillery.com. Support for WPR comes from The Quilt Peddler in Fenimore, Wisconsin, specializing in quilting fabric and supplies, offering a nostalgic shopping experience. More about The Quilt Peddler in Fenimore at QuiltPeddlerLLC.com.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller, and our guest today is Jeff Gilman. He is the author of several books on gardening, director of the University of North Carolina's Charlotte Botanical Gardens, and great to have him along to talk with us. He was an associate professor in the Department of Horticulture at the University of Minnesota, so great to have him along. And certainly, if you have questions or comments for him, join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. You know, Jeffrey, it was interesting your conversation about what is real organic farming. Kurt in Chippewa Falls has a comment or two on it. Let's go there. Kurt, hi.
Yeah, hi. Jeff is exactly right. Organic should be considered in terms of what is put into the food we eat, not what you can label as having been left out necessarily. A crime that's been committed against organic farming, and there are still some organic farmers left, but the whole idea of organic has been expropriated by big corporations who are utilizing, exploiting the idea of organic food as a health thing, and they have driven down the pricing and the market so badly that real organic is becoming pretty difficult to maintain.
Jeff, do you have a comment on that?
I agree 100%. I mean, the thing is, you can grow organically and still do terrible things to the soil and still use a lot of pesticides. A real organic grower doesn't do that. A real organic grower doesn't use any pesticides. They usually put up with a lower yield, but they come out with a product which is healthier for the environment and potentially healthier for people. When you start doing some of this, I'll call it industry organic, it's not good for the environment. Pesticides are used, and yes, they're organic pesticides, but that doesn't, you know, rattlesnake bite, perfectly organic. But I still wouldn't want one. So it's they use this copper sulfate. Organic gardening and organic growing is unfortunately something that is suffering from the big industry getting a hold of it and exploiting it.
Joan from Viroqua called to ask what you thought about hydroponic methods of growing vegetables.
I've done hydroponics for around 30 years. I love hydroponic production. I actually like hydroponic production with natural light. If you know what you're doing with hydroponics, you can grow a lot more stuff in a small area than any other method. If you know what you're doing with hydroponics, it does take some time to learn the techniques.
You know, I was thinking earlier as you were talking about various varieties. I thought about apples, and since you were in Minnesota,
yeah.
University of Minnesota came out with an apple variety that has become very popular.
You talk about Honeycrisp or Snowsweet or
Honeycrisp.
Yeah,
and we see a lot of Honeycrisp, but a Honeycrisp is not the same in Wisconsin. Have grown here in Wisconsin or even other states than the ones that they grew right on those test plots in Minnesota. And I think it has to do with the conditions under which the trees are grown, the soil.
Absolutely.
What's in the, you know, can you talk about that a little? They don't taste the same.
Okay, and I can't talk about Honeycrisp specifically, but there are a few things going on, and there is variety between apples. So the first thing that you need to understand is that apples are grafted onto a rootstock. Remember I talked about tomatoes being on Jimson weed, making them poisonous?
Yeah.
Well, apples are on different rootstocks, and this usually has makes a huge difference, but it can make a difference, both in the size and the flavor of the apples. Now, besides that, with the different rootstocks, you've also got different minerals in the soil. And the different minerals in the soil will also lead to different flavors in the apple. And then I want to talk about one mineral in particular, and that's nitrogen. A lot of nitrogen will make an apple potentially larger, which will give it a different flavor. And then, again, beyond that, take it a step beyond that, watering at certain times of the year also can make an apple watery or more flavorful. So absolutely, the environment, the rootstock, so many things can go on to affect an apple's flavor besides just the fact that it's a Honeycrisp, for example.
Speaking of different varieties, I've got a butternut squash sitting on my kitchen table, and Jill was wondering if a butternut squash is that a native squash?
I haven't done the squash episode yet. My recollection is that butternut is Central American, but I may be wrong, so don't quote me on that.
We have a tremendous variety of squash, do we not?
We do. And you know the most interesting one? I was actually showing it to my class the other day. Do you know the loofah?
Yes. I do.
It is amazing. So we grow it here in Charlotte. I shouldn't say we grow it in Charlotte because we don't do it industrially, but a lot of people do it in their gardens. And then they take the squash and they clear off all the stuff. You can eat loofah, by the way. It's healthy to eat, obviously full of fiber. And then they clean it off. They soak it in water, clean it off, clean out all the seeds, and then they cut it up, and you have that cool sponge thing that you use in the shower. It's incredible. Have you grown one?
Well, I tell you, I have not, but I have a guest on my show from time to time. She's called the Gourd Gal.
Okay.
And she and her husband, the gourd guy and the gourd gal, they make gourds of all kinds, and they do grow loofah and sell it here in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful.
It's a very neat plant. Like I say, you know, people They hear that there's fiber in the food, but they don't really have an idea what that means. I tell you what, you see a loofah gourd cleaned out, and you say, ah, that is what the fiber that I'm eating. That's what fiber is.
Well, you know, here I was asking about butternut, if it's native or not. Native plants have become very popular, at least here for sure, in this state. How many crops we grow here in the United States are native, really?
Oh, very, very few. I mentioned that in terms of acreage, only about 2% of the crops in the U.S., 2% of the acreage in the U.S. is in native crops. But, you know, let's tick off a couple of the native crops. Big one is blueberry. Mm. Certainly cranberry. Strawberries are a cross between a U.S. species and a Chilean species. And actually, they usually have a little bit of a European species in them, too. Maple syrup is actually, in terms of acreage, maple syrup is a big one. If you like birch beer, there's some birch beer and a few squash. And boy, I know I'm missing one or two, but we really just don't have a lot. Wild rice, there is a wild rice.
Yeah.
Yep, wild rice is actually native. And then, I mean, you know, can you think of any more?
Well, you know, I don't know if corn was ever native to, I mean, certainly corn. Native Americans grew corn, but it probably...
Exactly.
It may have come from...
Central America.
Central
corn
America.
Corn is very, very interesting because it's native to Central America, but it was moved by the Native Americans rather than by Europeans.
Okay, so... We can't even, and corn, I don't know what percentage corn constitutes to our diet, but it's in practically everything.
Well, that's the whole thing with corn. I mean, if you look at corn out there in the fields, most of that goes to animal feed because we eat so much meat. I mean, we had that first caller discussing is plant food. Plants are better. And we just eat so, but we eat so much meat, we crave it. Most of our crops, if you look at the acreage, most of our crops go into producing meat that we can eat. And then the second biggest use for corn after animal feed is ethanol. You know, to drive our cars. It's crazy.
Oh, man. Well, Mary is in Sun City West out in Arizona, and she's listening and has a question for you. Let's go there. Sure. Mary, hi.
Hi. Yes, we have one grapefruit and one orange tree. I don't know the variety, but they have been so good and so sweet, especially the grapefruit. Mm-hmm. But this year, for some reason, especially the grapefruit, was not that nice sweetness. I just wondered if it was something. I know they had a lot of rain this year. I just wondered, is there anything that would help determine that?
Well, usually when you have a tree that's been producing sweet fruit and it produces a sour fruit, it usually indicates that it hasn't had enough time to ripen. So you may have picked early. The other thing is that there's actually a hormone which helps to sweeten plants. It's called ethylene. And if you have a rotting banana or an overripe apple, and you put that with the grapefruit for a couple of days, it actually may help sweeten it.
Oh, get a fruit ripening bowl is what you need there.
There. That's I've heard that term before. Yes.
And Jeannie Dosh, an old friend of mine, gave me one of those a long, long time ago as a gift, and they really do work. Or you can put them in a paper bag.
Yep. It all works.
It all works. And see, now, Mary, I'm going to brag about my lime tree because my lime tree is producing lots of limes right now as we speak. And I'm actually was online looking up some recipes that involve more limes. Limes are wonderful. And a lime, if you leave the lime sit on the tree, which often happens, you have so many of them, when they ripen completely, they turn yellow. And the flavor changes more to more lemony. And I don't know if you've ever grown a lime tree or a lime or not. Jeff, but that's what happens.
You know, we do grow them here, but I've never looked for that. So now that is going to be something for me to keep my eye on.
Yeah, well, let a few stay on the tree.
Yep, I will.
And
what a great choice.
And just
well, I mean, I love the fragrance of not just the limes and lemons, but the flowers. Citrus flowers have to be some of the most just wonderful scented flowers out there.
Oh, for sure. Well, tell me what's coming up with your podcast. What are you going to be talking about next?
Well, on Monday, we've got one on dates. Dates always a lot of fun, although I got to tell you, searching for dates... when I was, you know, on Google, I had to change my search terms, had to be very careful because I was finding all kinds of odd dates. But it is indeed a type of palm. And then besides dates, we've got one coming out on rutabaga, which, let me tell you, I hadn't tried a rutabaga before, but of course, before the podcast, I had to try one. Love rutabaga. And we have a few more there in the hold. We also did sassafras. If you like root beer, sassafras will be coming out soon.
And how do people sign up for your podcast?
We've had a number of people sign up for the podcast. In the hundreds, low thousands. I get emails weekly or twice a week asking for different topics. Just got one recently for mustard. We will be sure to hit mustard. We haven't done it yet, but we'll hit mustard sometime in the next month or two.
And how do you sign up?
So if you just go to your podcast app on your iPhone, you can just download it there. If you'd like to listen on computer, you can go to the UNC Charlotte Botanical Gardens website. That's gardens.uncc.edu. In fact, for everybody out there, we'd love you to check us out. If you're coming through the Charlotte area, it's a free garden. It's free to just drop by and take a look. And again, that's gardens, that's gardens.uncc.edu.
Jeffrey Gilman. Jeff Gilman is the author of 5 books on gardening, and he is now the director of the University of North Carolina, Charlotte Botanical Gardens, and great to have a chance to talk with him. Here is his podcast on rutabagas, and we have rutabagas growing like crazy here in Wisconsin. I think in Neillsville, they even have a rutabaga festival, and there's a rutabaga queen, if you can believe that. Gene Purcell joining me right now. Gene, did you know that?
You know, I didn't know it, but I could have guessed because we've got a festival for everything. It's amazing what we celebrate in Wisconsin, and rutabagas are fit nicely in there.
And that's just one of the many interesting features and tips and information you'll hear during our Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. Gene Purcell back with me. As a WPR listener, you know you're always going to hear something interesting when you tune in, and that's thanks to your support. So, listeners, you provide the largest source of funding for our programs when you give at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
You know, last hour we heard from 19 pledgers. That was good. Almost made our goal. Just one short. But we're going to make it up this hour is the way that's going to roll. We've got another goal this hour of 20. We're halfway there. But here's the thing. We've got a dollar-for-dollar challenge in effect right now. So that ought to get the phones going. This generous match comes to us from a 9XM Leadership Circle member, so one of our supporters here at Wisconsin Public Radio. And what it means, basically, is that she's going to match every dollar you give, up to $3,000.
It's her way of encouraging you to join in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. So you can double your support for the programs you love if you give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
That's great. So get going on those phones. Let's get that match made. And you know, when you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, there's all sorts of benefits to it. Of course, we've been talking about those, but here's one I did not know. I did not know that if you are a master gardener in Wisconsin, you can get continuing education credit just for listening to Garden Talk, which tells you a little bit about the show and just what a valuable resource it is. You can enjoy Garden Talk, and I know I have, whether you're an expert or a novice.
We have some of the best gardening resource people anywhere, in the state or out of the state, as a matter of fact, to answer your questions, whether it's about fruit trees, organic gardening, rose bushes, so many other topics. So apply a little fertilizer to the program right now by making your gift at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
That's right. Plant those seeds, add some fertilizer and some great soil, and you're providing that great soil for us right now and that fertilizer, so let's keep it going. This membership drive, of course, we've also got an exciting drawing for a $500 grocery gift card we've been talking a little bit about. In all, you're going to have five opportunities to win. No contribution is necessary, and you can see all the rules at WPR.org. But be safe, and the simple way to think about it is you're automatically entered when you make a donation of any amount right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Pretty much everything you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio is the result of thoughtful preparation, maybe without the rutabaga business.
Not the rutabaga, and there's pledge drives sometimes, you know.
But we do our homework so that most of the time you're going to get the highest quality radio program. So I hope you'll show your commitment to this quality. Commit now when you make your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, and as you think about making donations, I know a lot of people use kind of the same process. You think about what's important to you. You think about families, friends, hobbies, things that you want to invest in, whether it's your time or whether it's your money. And giving to what's important to you really does make a difference in your life. And I know from personal experience, it makes you feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest source of funding is listener support. So your gift makes a big difference in your life, or could make anyway. And certainly it'll make the difference in the lives of hundreds of thousands of other listeners. So together, we make a big impact on our community. So make your difference today with your first ever gift of, what, $10 a month, $120 a month, or just $120 one time. Right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is my companion. It provides an important outlet that is balanced, provides content and insights from a range of perspectives. We pay for other media, newspapers, television, so there's no reason why we shouldn't invest in something that we get so much value from. I'm Terry from Madison, Wisconsin, and as a member of the 9XM Leadership Circle, I enjoy supporting this important cultural resource that benefits so many people throughout Wisconsin.
Members of the 9XM Leadership Circle give annual gifts of $1,200 or more. Join this group of leadership donors. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation. Larry Mueller here with Jane Purcell. Your support makes these programs possible, and your gift, $10, $20 a month, whatever amount you choose is the right amount. And we've got that challenge grant going on.
Dollar for dollar match.
Yeah.
You know, opportunities like this don't come along very often, and I'm terrible at investing because it's so complicated. Yeah. This is not complicated. You make a donation of, let's call it $100, and all of a sudden, boom, the impact is doubled. And that's what the dollar-for-dollar match is all about. So make a pledge online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So once in a while, you do get more than you pay for. And I think WPR is one place where that's true today. Your gift, again, of $2 a day to support the programs you love, that would turn into $4 a day.
It's amazing, isn't it? It feels like magic, but it's not. We've had a very generous 9XM Leadership Circle member who has said, I want to see other people become a member, and I'm willing to put some money into the game to make it happen. So that dollar-for-dollar match, in effect right now, your opportunity to get in, and I see it's having an impact right now. We are well on our way to making that goal.
But we have to go away. We can't talk for very much longer. So I want to just impress on you so much a chance for you to double your gift right now when you give at WPR.org or by phoning 888 888- 202-2552. I want to thank you so much if you've already given. If you haven't, do it right now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. And please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.